Chapter 4. Mrs. Peerybingle instantly struck in. 2 months and 3 days. Vaccinated just 6 weeks ago. Oh. Took very fine lie. Considered, by the doctor, a remarkably beautiful child. Equal to the general run of children at 5 months so old. Takes notice, in a way quite wonderful. May seem impossible to you, but feels his legs already. ... Here the breathless little mother, who had been shrieking these short sentences into the old man's ear, until her pretty face was crimsoned, held up the baby before him as a stubborn and triumphant fact, while Tilly Slowboy, with a melodious cry of catcher, catcher which sounded like some unknown words, adapted to a popular sneeze, performed some cow-like gambols round that all unconscious innocent. Hark! He's called for, sure enough, ... said John. There's somebody at the door. Open it, Tilly. ... Before she could reach it, however, it was opened from without, being a primitive sort of door, with a latch, that anyone could lift, if he chose, and a good many people did choose, for all kinds of neighbors liked to have a cheerful word or two with the carrier, though he was no great talker himself. Being opened, it gave admission to a little, meager, thoughtful, dingy-faced man, who seemed to have made himself a great coat from the sackcloth covering of some old box. For, when he turned to shut the door, and keep the weather out, he disclosed upon the back of that garment, the inscription G&T in large black capitals. Also the word glass in bold characters. Good evening, John. ... said the little man. Good evening, Mum. Good evening, Tilly. Good evening, Unbecknon. How's baby, Mum? Boxer's pretty well, I hope. ... All thriving, Caleb, replied Dot. I am sure you need only look at the dear child, for one, to know that. ... And I'm sure I need only look at you for another, said Caleb. He didn't look at her though. He had a wandering and thoughtful eye which seemed to be always projecting itself into some other time and place, no matter what he said. A description which will equally apply to his voice. Or at John for another, said Caleb. Or at Tilly, as far as that goes. Or certainly at Boxer. Busy just now, Caleb? Asked the carrier. Why, pretty well, John, he returned, with the distraught air of a man who was casting about for the philosopher's stone, at least. Pretty much so. There's rather a run on Noah's Arks at present. I could have wished to improve upon the family, but I don't see how it's to be done at the price. It would be a satisfaction to one's mind, to make it clear which was Shems and Hams, and which was wives. Flies and on that scale neither, as compared with elephants you know. Ah. Well. Have you got anything in the parcel line for me, John? The carrier put his hand into a pocket of the coat he had taken off, and brought out, carefully preserved in moss and paper, a tiny flower pot. There it is. He said, adjusting it with great care. Not so much as a leaf damaged. Full of buds. Caleb's dull eye brightened, as he took it, and thanked him. Dear, Caleb, said the carrier. Very dear at this season. Never mind that. It would be cheap to me, whatever it cost, returned the little man. Anything else, John? A small box, replied the carrier. Here you are. For Caleb Plummer, said the little man, spelling out the direction. With cash. With cash, John? I don't think it's for me. With care, returned the carrier, looking over his shoulder. Where do you make out cash? Oh. To be sure. Said Caleb. It's all right. With care. Yes, yes, that's mine. It might have been with cash, indeed, if my dear boy in the golden South Americas had lived, John. You loved him like a son, Didn't you? You needn't say you did.
I know, of course. Caleb Plummer. With care.
Yes, yes, it's all right. It's a box of doll's eyes for my daughter's work.
I wish it was her own sight in a box, John.
Apostrophe, I wish it was, or could be.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the carrier.
Thank'ee, apostrophe, said the little man.
You speak very hearty.
To think that she should never see the dolls and the may staring at her, so bold, all day long.
That's where it cuts.
What's the damage, John?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'll damage you, apostrophe, said John, if you inquire.
Dot.
Very near?
Apostrophe, well, it's like you to say so, apostrophe, observed the little man.
It's your kind way.
Let me see.
I think that's all.
Apostrophe, I think not, apostrophe, said the carrier.
Try again.
Apostrophe, something for our governor, eh?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Caleb, after pondering a little while.
To be sure.
That's what I came for, but my head's so running on the marks and things.
He hasn't been here, has he?
Apostrophe, not he, apostrophe, returned the carrier.
He's too busy, courting.
Apostrophe, he's coming round though, apostrophe, said Caleb. For he told me to keep on the near side of the road going home, and it was 10 to 1 he'd take me up.
I had better go, by the by.
You couldn't have the goodness to let me pinch Boxer's tail, Mum, for half a moment, could you?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, Caleb?
What a question.
Apostrophe, oh never mind, Mum, apostrophe, said the little man.
He mightn't like it perhaps.
There's a small order just come in, for barking dogs, and I should wish to go as close to Natter as I could, for sixpence.
That's all.
Never mind, Mum.
Apostrophe, it happened opportunely, that Boxer, without receiving the proposed stimulus, began to bark with great zeal.
But, as this implied the approach of some new visitor, Caleb, postponing his study from the life to a more convenient season, shouldered the round box, and took a hurried leave.
He might have spared himself the trouble, for he met the visitor upon the threshold.
Oh, you are here, are you?
Wait a bit. I'll take you home.
John Peerybingle, my service to you.
More of my service to your pretty wife.
Handsomer every day.
Better too, if possible.
And younger, apostrophe, mused the speaker, in a low voice,
that's the devil of it.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, I should be astonished at your paying compliments, Mr. Tackleton, apostrophe, said Dot, not with the best grace in the world, but for your condition.
Apostrophe, you know all about it then?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have got myself to believe it, somehow, apostrophe, said Dot.
After a hard struggle, I suppose?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, very.
Apostrophe, Tackleton the toy merchant, pretty generally known as Gruff and Tackleton for, that was the firm, though Gruff had been bought out long ago, only leaving his name, and as some said his nature, according to its dictionary meaning, in the business Tackleton the toy merchant, was a man whose vocation had been quite misunderstood by his parents and guardians.
If they had made him a money lender, or a sharp attorney, or a sheriff's officer, or a broker, he might have sown his discontented oats in his youth, and, after having had the full run of himself in ill-natured transactions, might have turned out amiable, at last, for the sake of a little freshness and novelty. But, cramped and chafing in the peaceable pursuit of toy-making, he was a domestic ogre, who had been living on children all his life, and was their implacable enemy.
He despised all toys, wouldn't have bought one for the world, delighted, in his malice, to insinuate grim expressions into the faces of brown paper farmers who drove pigs to market, bellmen who advertised lost lawyers' consciences, movable old ladies who darned stockings or carved pies, and other like samples of his stock in trade.
In appalling masks, hideous, hairy, red-eyed jacks in boxes, vampire kites, demoniacal tumblers who wouldn't lie down, and were perpetually flying forward,
to stare infants out of countenance. His soul perfectly reveled. They were his only relief and safety valve. He was great in such inventions. Anything suggestive of a pony nightmare was delicious to him. He had even lost money, and he took to that toy very kindly by getting up goblin slides for magic lanterns, whereon the powers of darkness were depicted as a sort of supernatural shellfish with human faces. In intensifying the portraiture of giants, he had sunk quite a little capital, and, though no painter himself, he could indicate, for the instruction of his artists, with a piece of chalk, a certain furtive leer for the countenances of those monsters, which was safe to destroy the peace of mind of any young gentleman between the ages of 6 and 11, for the whole Christmas or midsummer vacation. What he was in toys, he was, as most men are, in other things. You may easily suppose, therefore, that within the great green cape, which reached down to the calves of his legs, there was buttoned up to the chin an uncommonly pleasant fellow, and that he was about as choice a spirit, and as agreeable a companion, as ever stood in a pair of bull-headed looking boots with mahogany-colored tops. Still, Tackleton, the toy merchant, was going to be married. In spite of all this, he was going to be married. And to a young wife too, a beautiful young wife. He didn't look much like a bridegroom, as he stood in the carrier's kitchen, with a twist in his dry face, and a screw in his body, and his hat jerked over the bridge of his nose, and his hands tucked down into the bottoms of his pockets, and his whole sarcastic ill-conditioned self peering out of one little corner of one little eye, like the concentrated essence of any number of ravens. But, a bridegroom he designed to be. In 3 days' time. Next Thursday. The last day of the first month in the year. That's my wedding day, said Tackleton. Did I mention that he had always one eye wide open, and one eye nearly shut, and that the one eye nearly shut was always the expressive eye? I don't think I did. That's my wedding day. Said Tackleton, rattling his money. Why, it's our wedding day too, exclaimed the carrier. Ha ha! Laughed Tackleton. Odd. You're just such another couple. Just. The indignation of Dot at this presumptuous assertion is not to be described. What next? His imagination would compass the possibility of just such another baby, perhaps. The man was mad. I say, a word with you, murmured Tackleton, nudging the carrier with his elbow and taking him a little apart. You'll come to the wedding? We're in the same boat, you know. How in the same boat? Inquired the carrier. A little disparity, you know, said Tackleton, with another nudge. Come and spend an evening with us, beforehand. Why? Demanded John, astonished at this pressing hospitality. Why? Returned the other. That's a new way of receiving an invitation. Why, for pleasure sociability, you know, and all that. I thought you were never sociable, said John, in his plain way. Pshaw! It's of no use to be anything but free with you, I see, said Tackleton. Why, then, the truth is you have a, what tea-drinking people call a sort of a comfortable appearance together, you and your wife. We know better, you know, but no, we don't know better, interposed John. What are you talking about? Well, we don't know better than, said Tackleton. We'll agree that we don't. As you like, what does it matter? I was going to say, as you have that sort of appearance, your company will produce a favorable effect on Mrs. Tackleton, that will be. And, though I don't think your good lady's very friendly to me in this matter, still she can't help herself from falling into my views, for there's a compactness and coziness of appearance about her that always tells, even in an indifferent case. You'll say you'll come? apostrophe apostrophe, we have arranged to keep our wedding day as far as that goes, at home, apostrophe said John. We have made the promise to ourselves these 6 months. We think, you see, that home apostrophe, bah, what's home? Apostrophe cried Tackleton. Four walls and a ceiling.
Why don't you kill that cricket?
I would. I always do. I hate their noise. There are four walls and a ceiling at my house. Come to me. Apostrophe apostrophe, you kill your crickets, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe said John.
Scrunchum, sir, apostrophe returned the other, setting his heel heavily on the floor.
You will say you'll come? It's as much your interest as mine, you know, that the women should persuade each other that they're quiet and contented, and couldn't be better off. I know their way. Whatever one woman says, another woman is determined to clinch, always. There's that spirit of emulation among them, sir, that if your wife says to my wife, I'm the happiest woman in the world, and mine's the best husband in the world, and I dote on him, my wife will say the same to yours, or more, and half believe it.
Apostrophe, do you mean to say she don't, then?
Apostrophe, apostrophe asked the carrier.
Don't.
Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Tackleton, with a short, sharp laugh.
Don't what?
Apostrophe, the carrier had some faint idea of adding, dote upon you.
Apostrophe, but, happening to meet the half-closed eye, as it twinkled upon him over the turned-up collar of the cape, which was within an ace of poking it out, he felt it such an unlikely part and parcel of anything to be doted on, that he substituted, that she don't believe it?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, are you dog?
You're joking, apostrophe said Tackleton.
But the carrier, though slow to understand the full drift of his meaning, eyed him in such a serious manner that he was obliged to be a little more explanatory.
I have the humor, apostrophe said Tackleton,
holding up the fingers of his left hand and tapping the forefinger to imply there I am, Tackleton to wit.
I have the humor, sir, to marry a young wife and a pretty wife.
Here he rapped his little finger, to express the bride, not sparingly, but sharply, with a sense of power. I'm able to gratify that humor and I do. It's my whim. But now look there.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, he pointed to where Dot was sitting, thoughtfully, before the fire.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.